Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Every weekday around 10 a.m.
I've been watching you. I like the way you move. So go ahead, girl, just do that. I shake.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Rock Your Body by Justin Timberlake, Millington, Tennessee Zone, now Leaper's Fork, Tennessee Zone. Play that today because he did a thing last night with kids at the Stax Academy that I got to sit in on or be a fly on the wall for and read a little thing about.
You did write a thing about it at the Daily Memphian. What's Justin Timberlake's best work?
That may have been it right there. That's a very, like, you know, late 70s Michael Jackson sound alike kind of thing, but that's a good thing to sound alike. You know, I think Justin Timberlake has lots of good singles. He's more of a singles artist, but like Rock Your Body, Cry Me a River, What Goes Around Comes Around. I mean, there's lots of good Justin Timberlake songs. You know, I'm not saying he's Bob Dylan or anything, but he's made lots of good records.
And what was the event yesterday? So what did he do?
So he has gotten involved with Stax over the past couple years with the Stax Music Academy in different ways. But he and some corporate partners donated the songwriting lab, fully equipped with equipment and the whole thing at the academy. And over the past year or so, they've been doing the songwriting workshop with a group of their students. And Justin Timberlake has been sort of a mentor sounding board for that. And there's eight students in four pairs, and they were writing and producing songs. With Justin Timberlake and one of his producers, who's a Grammy winner, sort of as mentors from afar, in addition to the mentors here in town. And then the event last night was they played the completed songs for Justin Timberlake, who got to effuse over all of them.
It sounded like from the sections you quoted, that he was effusing over all of them.
He was, but they were all good.
Were they good songs?
They were, yeah. For high school students, yeah. Yes. I mean, yes, very good. I mean, he didn't have to fake it to be impressed, right, by the songs. And then it wasn't like uniform, because there was, as I pointed out, the album, there was one that he was particularly impressed by, and I think my own personal opinion is he was right for that to be the one he was particularly impressed by. He said, "I could hear that on the radio today," and I agree. I could have heard it on the radio too.
Was he good with the kids? Was he?
Yeah, I mean, it was on Zoom, and so he was from right, home and on Zoom, and there in the song lab at Stax on the Zoom. And no, I mean, if you've ever seen Justin, in some ways, Justin Timberlake is at his best when he's just like being a charming dude, and not, you know, when he's on like the Tonight Show or hosting Saturday Night Live or that kind of thing, right?
Right.
I almost feel like his true calling is to be like an old school variety show host, but he's too big of a celebrity to do that.
Right.
Like back when Johnny Cash used to have his own variety show every week, and like, you know, Carol Burnett had the Carol Burnett show, and like his, to right, me, his truest calling would be like the Justin Timberlake variety show host, but he's too big of a celebrity to do it.
Is he an, what is, how is he as an actor?
He's not great, but he's okay. He's good in The Social Network, if you've ever seen that.
Like, I've seen The Social Network, yeah.
You know what's cooler than $1 million, $1 billion? That's a good line reading from Justin Timberlake there. He and Dakota Johnson the next morning, you know, in her apartment. He's good in that movie. I think, he's not going to win an Oscar for acting anytime, but like, he's viable, I would say.
Anyway, you can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. He also has been, like, he's been active with Stax generally as well. Like, he did that Biden thing, right? Wasn't that it?
Yeah, he did a pre-tape performance that was part of the inaugural telecast. And then before that, he'd done a thing with Ellen DeGeneres, where she did some TV special giveaway thing, and they did a giveaway to Stack students on that show too.
I lamented that yesterday I had just had Dan Devine on talking about the Ringer's ranking of Pixar movies, and you as a movie critic.
Yep.
Let me give you their top five. Ready?
Right.
WALL-E is one. Toy Story is two. Ratatouille is three. Coco is four. Toy Story 3 is five. I'll keep going. Up is six. I'll give you 10. The Incredibles is seven. Finding Nemo is eight. Some great movies here. Inside Out is nine. And Toy Story 2 is 10.
So underrated on that list to me are Inside Out and Finding Nemo. Inside Out would probably be my number one. My top five in some order would be Inside Out, Finding Nemo. What am I forgetting? Coco, Ratatouille, and the first 15 minutes of Up. That'd be my top five.
It's funny.
If I could combine the first 15 minutes of Up with the first half of WALL-E, I think the best of all Pixar is the first 15 minutes of Up and the first half of WALL-E. To me, WALL-E, the first half is great, and the second half gets into sort of just noisy action movie cartoon territory that's less interesting.
This is a point Connor made yesterday, is that the first 15 minutes of Up is great and the rest of it's fine.
That's right. That's, I think, 100% minutes, correct.
The first 15 minutes.
The opening sequence of Up is incredible, and yeah, if you want to be balling in a movie, that's it.
It's his life, basically.
Yeah, and then after that, it becomes like, you know, a cartoon chase adventure thing that's pretty standard.
Okay. We got lots of basketball to talk about. Let's start with the trade. The Oklahoma City Thunder obtain Kemba Walker, the 16th pick. Celtics get Al Horford and what's this young fellow's name again?
Moses Brown.
7-2, got his first start against the Memphis Grizzlies.
He killed the Grizzlies.
He then killed the Celtics.
Yeah, no, he put up, he's a guy who was sort of, I think he was undrafted, and they plucked out of the G League, and they played him a lot when they were tanking. And he had lots of good games. I actually pulled him onto my fantasy team late in the season.
He had lots of big number games.
He had lots of big games late when they were tanking, right? And it's the kind of thing where, you know, it's like Marshawn Brooks was great for a couple weeks when the Grizzlies were tanking, right? And so it's hard to determine how much faith to put in stuff like that late in the season. You know, DeLon Wright had three triple-doubles in a row or whatever late in the season for the Grizzlies in one of those situations. And so it's hard to know how much to make of that, but he was good when they gave him, or at least productive when they gave him time. They inked him to one of these John Conchar style, multiple year, mostly unguaranteed, super cheap contracts. And so to me, when I see that trade, Moses Brown is not just like, you know, your meaningless throw-in name in a trade. I think he's probably the equivalent of like a late first round pick. Like if he were in this summer's draft with his current contract, where would he get picked? I'm guessing he gets picked like 27th or like something like that.
Well, the truth of the matter is if a 7'2 athletic guy got picked with the 16th pick, it wouldn't have been.
Well, this is the other thing, is that I think we always, when it's a draft pick and not a player, everyone envisions the best case scenario always.
Right.
And if you go back, you know, over the last 10 years and look at like what's your median value on the number 16 pick, like I looked at what the last 3 years were. And so last year was Isaiah Stewart for Detroit, who looks pretty good, but probably is going to be a mid-rotation player.
Right.
The year before is Chuma Okeke of Orlando, who missed a whole year with injury, and then he played some last year, and it's really unclear what, if anything, he's going to be. And then before that was Zaire Smith, who's a bust, right? And so, like, Moses Brown right now, like, probably is not that different from what a median outcome is.
Right.
You obviously envision a better outcome. And so, anyway, I think the number 16 pick is more valuable than Moses Brown, but I think there's an offset there, right? And then there's an offset between the Al Horford, Kemba Walker contract situations. To me, the key in that trade for Oklahoma City is probably rehabbing Kemba Walker to the point of having positive trade value. And I think they're betting on that. They're saying, you know, we got the 16 pick. We're adding to our chest of picks or whatever, which we think is more valuable than Moses Brown, although Moses Brown is not unvaluable. But the key here is we're adding these extra years and money of Kemba, but we think Kemba at 31, 3 years younger than Al Horford, and with the track record he has, we can, you know, once upon a time we traded for Chris Paul and people thought that was a negative contract, and look what happened,
right?
And so I think Oklahoma City is placing partially a bet on rehabbing Kemba Walker into positive trade value. And they're saying short term, we don't care about the money because, like, we're not trying to win and all of our players are young anyway.
How about from the Celtics' perspective?
That's interesting. You know, obviously the Kemba thing wasn't working. It's interesting that Brad Stevens, who had been the coach, right, makes the trade, right?
Wheels around and
so not only had he been Kemba's coach, he had been Al Horford's coach, right?
Right.
And so I think it's not just it's a lot of it's about the contract difference, but I think part of it's about he thinks Al Horford can play for him. And
well, and Al Horford was good. That's why they sat him down last year,
right?
Because
right.
he was good. Right.
So I think they see short term, like, you know, we'll change our team around, but like it's not just a contract play. Al Horford will play for us. And then you do get the contract relief sooner. Hey, you get it now in terms of different contracts, but then in terms of coming off the books completely, it's sooner. Horford's basically a year and a half, and Kemba's 3 years.
Right.
I don't know, given the magnitude of contracts they have on Tatum and Brown, like, I don't think – I mean, I don't know what their long-range planning is, but I don't think it's like you get max cap room in a year. Like,
honestly think just to pay for their guys is going to be an issue.
Yeah,
they
got
to do something with Fournier, right, at some point if they do something.
So I think you can see – and this tends to be the case with trades. Like, when teams make trades, it's almost never a challenge trade. It's not a our guy versus your guy, who's going to win. Right. That's just not the way trades are.
It's about money.
Well, it's about
space, money, tax,
well,
everything else, right?
Whatever. It's about teams are thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about themselves versus the team they're trading
right.
with. They're only thinking about themselves. And they're thinking about what are we trying to accomplish for ourselves. They're not worried about whether you get what you
right.
want out of it. They're worried about
right.
what they if they get what they want out of it. And it usually happens between teams who are trying to accomplish different things.
So what happens with the Celtics?
Look at the Marc Gasol-Toronto trade. Both those teams accomplished
right.
what they wanted to accomplish.
Right. What happens with the Celtics in their backcourt at this point? They obviously got Marcus Smart.
You know, with Tatum and Brown, those are the kind of players who are, you know, quasi-positionless.
Right.
Like when I start thinking about the Celtics roster, I'm never sure where to slot Jaylen Brown, right?
Right.
Is he a two? Is he a three? Is he a four? Like, whatever. So you'll have those two wings. You'll have a center, either, you know, Al Horford, Robert Williams, Moses Brown, three-headed monster, whatever. And then you figure out, like, who are the players to play with them. And, you know, right now they got Tristan Thompson, who I assume they'll be looking to deal, you know, because they don't see – you already got your three centers without Tristan Thompson.
Right.
I assume they'll be looking to deal him and deal his contract. Marcus Smart, it wouldn't surprise me if he's on the trade market as well. And so I got to think the Celtics are this is the beginning, not the end, of some kind of shakeup on the rest of their roster around Tatum and Brown. Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to the game last night, let's go with the rest of the news stuff. Rick Carlisle gone from Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, the Dallas stuff is interesting because it makes you wonder when you go back to that story that was in The Athletic, which clearly there was a lot of fire beneath that smoke.
Right. Yes.
But you wonder, did that story get out ahead of a shakeup that was about to happen, or did the fact of the story trigger the shakeup, right? Did people in Dallas get mad because Donnie Nelson leaked this story to The Athletic,
right,
and that's why Donnie Nelson's gone? Or did Donnie Nelson know he was about to be gone and thus leaked the story ahead of him? You know, I'm guessing.
Donnie Nelson was fired. Rick Carlisle left. Is that my understanding?
That's the way it came out, yeah.
But yeah,
essentially, the Rick Carlisle thing was not a firing.
That's very clearly he decided to go.
But and he also made it clear that he's looking to coach.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. That's very clear. Like, I'm not getting out of coaching. It's not going to work here for me anymore.
Right. And so, you know, to me, the Milwaukee thing, I think, is still hanging out there. We're going to have to wait and see what happens with Milwaukee. I mean, they won last night, so you know, I think the future is in the balance. If the Milwaukee job opens up, to me, that is the most obvious place for a Rick Carlisle. If it doesn't, like, who knows what Brad Stevens wants to do, but Rick Carlisle has background. He played
with
Boston, the Celtics,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's a team that wants to win now, and Rick Carlisle is a win-now coach, and, like, that would make a lot of sense, too.
The question you just asked, I think, is fascinating. Was all of this coming down in Dallas, and the story came out in
advance
ahead
of
all
of
it coming down, or did it come out? People got furious at Donnie Nelson, but then how does the Rick Carlisle thing play into it? He just says, I mean, evidently there was tension between Luka and Rick Carlisle,
right?
So where don't you want Rick Carlisle? Assuming he's a good coach, and this is a town that wants the Grizzlies to succeed relative to the Red, where don't we want him to go? Do we not want him to go to New Orleans?
Yeah, that's a good call. Let's not go to New Orleans for Rick. I do believe Rick Carlisle is one of the best coaches in the league. I think he is a I suspect he's a win now. He could, you know, maybe he has a Hubie Brown late coaching career. Like, I just want to teach these kids how to play. Right. But that has not been
right.
Dallas has not been a team that developed young players. Like, right. Luka arrived pretty much fully formed. Other than that, they've basically given away draft picks and, like, right. let young players ride on the bench. And, like, you know, that has not been his thing. He's not here to teach and develop. He's here to try to take a roster and navigate it to winning. And so, yeah, let's keep him away from New Orleans. Let's let them make another coaching mistake. I think, to me, again, Boston and Milwaukee, if it opens up, Indiana is an obvious win-now coaching situation.
And but winning at what level, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, a lot of people think if Bud gets fired in Milwaukee, he's going to go to Indiana, and then that team's going to win 54 games next year and flame out in the playoffs, which, you know.
Might be fine in Indiana.
Right.
For a little bit.
You know, Portland, is Portland trying to blow it up? Or are they trying to win? Like, you can see Rick Carlisle in Portland. Although
You got Portland open.
I think Terry Stotts may have come off of Carlisle's bench, so that'd be a little weird.
You got Portland open. You got Indiana open. You got Orlando open. You got New Orleans open. You
Boston,
got Dallas open. You got Boston open.
Washington with Scotty Brooks.
It's just unbelievable.
Well, you had one, I don't remember if it was last summer or the summer before, but there was one summer where there was very little coaching shakeup. And so it's sort of like, I mean, the average length on these is like 3 years or whatever. So we were probably due.
Yeah. And then in New Orleans, there's these reports, two interesting reports. One is John Hollinger said that the team most likely to relocate in the next 10 years is the New Orleans Pelicans.
This is interesting. So I had a conversation. I'm shooting on ice. I'm sorry about that. So when the news that you broke, I believe, about the Grizzlies lease stuff a year or so ago, that's something that's hovering down in the distance that everyone's aware of and they're confident they can deal with or whatever. But when you broke that was a thing, or you reminded people because it was public knowledge, five years ago, when that story came out, I got a call from not John Hollinger, but another national NBA writer who I'm friends with who was working on stories not related to the Grizzlies, but related around franchise stability issues elsewhere in the league. And he wanted to know, so what's up with this lease thing? And we had a long talk about it. And what I was told by him, and he was working with some other writers on this stuff. This was before the Minnesota stuff had come out in terms of selling. And what he told me was, when people around the league talk about possible franchise relocation, at that time there were only three franchises that people thought were even remote possibilities. And those were the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, and the Wolves. And his opinion, this is before the Wolves sale, was that the Wolves were really the most likely of the three. And that the Grizzlies of those three, the least likely. But those were the only three you could even envision scenarios about, right?
Yeah. The Pelicans obviously are owned by a local,
Gail Benson.
Gail Benson, the widow of Tom Benson, and so that
also owns the New Orleans Saints.
Also owns the Saints, but you know, hooked into this, you have the stories from the Athletic. Was it the Athletic or Shams? It was Shams, I guess, saying that folks close to Zion Williamson, family members, say he may want to be out. It's hard to believe a franchise or a that the city of New Orleans could squander Chris Paul,
Anthony Davis,
right. and Zion Williamson, and at some point not throw up your hands and New say, Orleans, maybe we'll screw this.
I mean, the main thing, really the only big thing New Orleans has going for them, is fully local ownership, right? Which is what the Grizzlies don't have, and now the Wolves are not going to have, But New Orleans is the smallest market in the league. Memphis is one of the smallest. New Orleans is the smallest. New Orleans, I think, and people can correct me if I'm wrong about this, if this has changed in the past few years, but New Orleans, I think, is the only market without a Fortune 500 company headquartered there. They have the local ownership of Gail Benson, but they don't have a FedEx and an international paper. Right. And there's no major corporate stuff there. And one of the smallest. And
then they got the Saints.
And then they have the Saints already there. And the arena is bad. Like, I've been to that arena. It's bad. It's just bad by NBA arena standards. Like, it's shocking. It feels like you're back at the pyramid walking around the concrete concourse.
Really?
Bad. And when I was there, I was in New Orleans in the spring. I was there when for the Zion game, but I was there before that in the spring one year. It was the year that Anthony Davis was making an MVP push. And I was there in the spring in the heat of the NBA season with Anthony Davis making an MVP push, and you wouldn't know that the New Orleans Pelicans existed. You're walking around like the Garden District right. or Magazine Street or whatever, and there's New Orleans Saints signs everywhere, and there's right. LSU signs everywhere, and like there's nothing about the Pelicans.
Right. I don't mean like I'm sure there are people there who care about the Pelicans, right. but writ large, there just would be no sadness about the Pelicans.
I don't see, unless the NBA, just because New Orleans is such a touristy market and they love doing all-star games there or whatever, like right. if that were the thing. But yeah,
well, you also see the interesting challenge of having a star in terms of the Zion in New Orleans and Luka in Dallas. Once you get one, great to get one, but then the world does swirl right. around them, and the Grizzlies, obviously, a lot of people always assume Ja's great for Memphis, he's happy, and I think it certainly looks like that's true right now, but it's amazing how quickly people go to, Zach Kleiman said it's not going to be a straight upward line.
Not a linear right? path, right.
As soon as the Grizzlies have an off year, people are going to be asking Ja Morant, yep. you know, is he going to be unhappy? Some of his cousins, would Ja like to play in LA? That's just the...
Yeah, no, that's going to happen. But that's partly why the Jaren thing is so important. Because I know people got excited about them making the playoffs last year, and I did too, right. and it was great. But the point I've made, and I feel like I'm the only one who's really making this case, you know, we talk about them being ahead of schedule. In some ways, they're behind schedule right. because the real schedule is competing deep in the playoffs with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr.
Right.
That is the real ultimate goal. It's not cracking the playoffs.
Right.
And in some ways, they're behind schedule on that. If it becomes this is the Ja and Jonas team, and then like you're one and out for the next right. two or three years, that's when you got a problem, right? That's the problem. And so that's when Ja's looking elsewhere because that's the New Orleans situation. That's what you don't want. And that's why the Jaren thing is so important to get him back on track, get his trajectory on track, and to be able to see, not only for us to see it, but for the players to see it, that this Ja and Jaren together can grow together to compete, to go deep in the playoffs 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, right?
Right. Your Bucks won last night. That
yes.
was nice to see.
Good job. I turned on the game. Because I'd done the Timberlake thing and I had to write about it. And then I went for a walk and I came back home. And by the time I came back home, it was halftime. And I turned it on. I was like, they're going to screw this up just the way Philly did when I started watching that game. But they did not do it. Good for them. Chris Middleton.
But the nice thing is they kept it close long enough that Harden and Durant both played 40
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Chris Middleton was great down the stretch. That's what they need. They need a shot maker. Chris right. Middleton, at least for that night, was that guy. And then Giannis was just like that one dunk. That
right.
was a leap off your couch
right.
and yell
yeah,
at the TV.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Dunk. And so that was great. So now we get a game 7, and you know I'm rooting for my Bucks.
All right, Chris. Well, you are off to see the world. So that's
there was a story in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week. My wife sent to me about how all the national parks are overcrowded and people are sitting in their cars for hours and they're closing the gates by 9 a.m. every day.
No.
And so we'll see how it goes. But you know,
you love being with the people.
At least we'll be driving around. I got books. I got music.
Are you going to have to cross the bridge?
We'll have to cross
to go west. Yeah. So what are you
unless
doing?
We're going to swim, we're not going to go
doing?
Horseback across
what are
the Mississippi.
What's your strategy for getting across our? Have you crossed our bridge?
I have not. I think my plan is to, if we can manage to get the kids into the car early
right.
enough, my plan is to leave like
5 a.m.
Yes, exactly that. Something super stupid early. And because I assume that it will be, I mean, we're leaving on Sunday, actually. So
Sunday at 5 a.m. would be pretty, you
yeah.
would think.
So that's my plan. My wife asked, should we go down to Hella? And I'm like, even if we have to sit we're sitting in our car waiting
right,
to get over the
right.
bridge, we're not going to sit in the car for an hour, which is what it would take to go down to Helena and do that detour.
All right. right, have a good trip. We'll see you when you get back. Thanks.
Thanks.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.